Anybody have any idea what today is? Probably not. Well, it's Sunday. This is Coptic Easter. You know, they use a different calendar. I believe they use the Julian calendar in Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. And they're celebrating Easter right now. Why do I bring that up? Because a lot of ISIS and Muslim Brotherhood have threatened to be blowing up Easter services today in Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. So bear that in mind as we think about Christian brothers, other places that may use different calendars and different things. I don't go in much for a lot of liturgical calendar stuff, but that's one I do bear in mind. But today, I've been out of the pulpit for a little while. Today we're returning to finish up Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, we're going to pick up verse 18 and read to the bottom. And we're going to call this the receipt of the covenant. The people are going to sign on the dotted line and say, "All right, God, this is your covenant. We're going to take it." The covenant terms, remember, was the Ten Commandments. So let's start at Exodus chapter 20, begin at verse 18, and we'll read to the bottom of the chapter. "And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, 'Speak thou with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die.' And Moses said unto the people, 'Fear not, for God has come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not.' And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. And the Lord said unto Moses, 'Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, Ye have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. Ye shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make unto you gods of gold. An altar of earth thou shalt make unto me, and shalt sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings and thy peace offerings, thy sheep and thine oxen. In all places where I record my name, I will come unto thee, and I will bless thee. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it of hewed stone. For if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon." Let's have a word of prayer. Lord, we do thank you for this day. We thank you that it's not raining. We thank you for all the blessings that you give to us. We thank you for having brought us through another week, when we're anticipating another, where you're going to show yourself mighty on our behalf, you're going to provide, and you're going to just show yourself to be the God that you are. You always have in the past, and we look forward to it in the future. We ask that you'll guide us through your word, show us what you'd have for us, and strengthen us for our upcoming tasks. And it's in your name I pray. Amen. So today we're basically looking at two things to finish out Exodus chapter 20. And it's going to be a short lesson today. I don't have a lot to say, but I don't want to break into chapter 20 just yet. 21 rather, just yet. The first thing that we're going to look at, and we just read it, is the receipt of the covenant. That basically goes from verse 18 to verse 21. And then we see God give a little description of the proper altar of worship in verses 22 to 26. Proper altar of worship. How we can approach God. Worship is the theme here today. So now that God has presented the terms of the covenant, that is the Ten Commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and on down through the list, the people have a decision now on how they're going to handle them. It's kind of an if-then situation that God's giving them. If they accept these terms, these Ten Commandments, then God will do certain things. And as I say, these terms of the covenant you and I know as the Ten Commandments. And these commandments are the working out of the principles of the character of God in the lives of His people. We've said that over and over, but I'm refreshing your minds because it's been a little while since I've been up here. We see that now that God has presented the terms, He's waiting for a response before He gives regulations for worship, which is going to follow next. God is later on, in the next few chapters, going to expand the rules for worship throughout most of the rest of the book. That's what most of the rest of the book of Exodus is this is how we worship God properly. And he gives case examples. But we get the introduction to the principles right here. You see, the concept that God's trying to get across here is that all of a believer's life ought to be an expression of worship to God. All of your life ought to be an expression of worship to God. It's not just one place where you gather once a week. Your entire life ought to be worship to God. And our lives will be changed when we have that realization. Your life will be different when you realize that your whole life is an act of worship. In the life of a believer, there ought to be no such thing as secular behavior. Now, for today and after today and for quite a little while, we're going to look at a series of case studies, basically. You know, when you get down, it gets, a lot of people skip over and get bored with Exodus 21, 22, 23, 24. If your neighbor's ox falls in a hole, what do you do? This is what you do. If your ox gores your neighbor's ox, this is what you do. But God gives these as case studies in exactly how the Ten Commandments work out in day-to-day life. Because you don't covet your neighbor's stuff, if you accidentally damage one of your neighbor's things, this is what you do. You're not looking your own interests. You're looking for the best interests of your neighbor, to the best interests of God, exhibiting God's character in your life. That's why these case studies are given. A lot of people skip those chapters in their study, but they really demonstrate how the Ten Commandments work out in everyday life. Now, we're going to see, as we look at those case studies that God gives, that he intends to show his people how the terms of the covenant are to affect every aspect of their lives. And they ought to affect every aspect of yours and my life. I don't even have an ox. My ox is not going to gore my neighbor's ox. You could say that that's irrelevant to me, but the principle's still the same. If I accidentally damage my neighbor, I should go above and beyond to restore. That's the principle. Now, if it seems that I've gotten off topic here, let me back up a little bit again. Verses 18 to 21 seem a little bit parenthetical. Let's read it again and you'll see what I mean. God's just finished doing the Ten Commandments. He's given the Ten Commandments. It finishes up with, "Thou shalt not covet." Then we go to verse 18 and it says, "And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, Speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, Fear not, for God is come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was." See, it's a parenthetical statement here. While the Ten Commandments are coming down, this was happening. God is still listing the terms of the covenant at this point. He's giving it to Moses and to the people. And they hear the thundering of the voice of God. And finally, they just can't stand it anymore. They have a mental breakdown here. I can't take it. The trumpets blaring, the thundering voice, the smoke, the fire, everything, all that entails the glory of God on the mountain. And as we read this passage, it seems that this experience was just too much for these people. They just can't take it anymore. It's overwhelming. They aren't ready to have God speak to them directly yet. They say, Moses, you speak to God, and then you speak to us. They would rather have a mediator, that is Moses, speak to God and relay to them. Did you know you and I are in the same boat? You and I are in the same boat. Jesus Christ is our mediator. You can read about that in Hebrews. Jesus Christ is our mediator. He speaks to God for us and to us for God. That's the picture. The awesomeness of the presence of God is too overwhelming for us to walk directly in. That's what Hebrews says. Yes, we can boldly go to the throne of grace, but Jesus Christ is our mediator. There is one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. So we could ask ourselves, well, we're back at Mount Sinai now. Ask yourselves, why does God choose to present himself to the people in such a terrifying way? Why all the showmanship? Why the smoke, the thunder, trumpet? Fear, yeah. Well, one reason could be to emphasize the critical importance of this moment. They're not going to forget this. You are not going to forget this. You're going to turn to your children, your grandchildren, and say, I remember that day when I stood at the base of the mountain, and God was there, and it was smoking, and there was lightning, and there was thunder, and there was trumpet blast. This is an important moment in human history. If the people reject the covenant at this point, all of human history will be altered. If they accept the covenant, all of human history is altered. This is a turning point in human history. God has now given rules on how people should live. But Moses gives us another clue here. He says that God hasn't come to destroy them, but rather to prove or to refine them, to make them better. You see, the law is to be a motivation for living a godly life as God requires. I'd like to reemphasize that. The law is to be the motivation for living a godly life that God requires. The law isn't an antithesis to what we're doing as Christians, and many Christians see it that way. Well, we're not under the law anymore. The law is to be our motivation. Because God has written these rules, yeah, that should motivate us to live a godly life. He wants them to base their behavior, he wants us to base our behavior on the reality of who he is. He is holy, he is pure, he is just. And you and I ought to try to be that way too. And when they realize the incredible power, the glory, and the majesty of God, they are going to think twice about sinning against him. This awareness of who God is and the proper response to it is what the Bible refers to as the fear of God. You read about it throughout the Bible. The fear of God, the fear of God. Moses even says that here. Let's see. Fear not, for God has come to prove you, that his fear may be before your faces. We ought to have that healthy fear of God. Moses is here saying that they don't have to be afraid that God wants to destroy them, but it should make them afraid to do anything that might be contrary to his nature. The fear of God brings a desire to honor and to obey him. Do you see that? That healthy fear of God makes us desire to honor and to obey him. Anything else is contrary to God's nature. So then, as I say, our second part today, and we're almost done already, is a look at the proper use of altars. Let's read verses 22 down to the bottom of the chapter again. And the Lord said unto Moses, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, Ye have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. Ye shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make unto you gods of gold. An altar of earth thou shalt make unto me, and shalt sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings, and thy peace offerings, thy sheep, and thine oxen. In all places where I record my name, I will come unto thee, and I will bless thee. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it of hewn stone, for if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon. The proper use of altars. You may recall that the Ten Commandments began with several that spoke of the proper approach to God, right? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not bow thyself down to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who taketh his name in vain. How do we approach God? Well, now we're starting, remember I told you that we're starting a case study portion of the book of Exodus? Well, here's an example, God says. Here's a case study of how you can approach God properly. You can approach him by way of an altar. And this is the way you're going to build an altar. This is what you're going to make the altar out of. And this is how you're going to go to the altar. This is how we approach God. This is our relationship with God. We're going to do that. We're going to look at our relationship before God before we look at our relationship to man. I was talking with Brother Fisher just a moment ago, not that long ago. I'm really excited about next week as we look at how God's rules for slavery. God's rules for slavery. I don't want to steal my own thunder, but it's a picture of yours and my life as Christians. Paul himself called himself a bond slave of Christ, right? We are slaves. Did you know slavery in the Old Testament was always voluntary? I don't want to steal my own thunder. I want you to consider that. I encourage you to read Exodus chapter 21, the first few verses, and think about slavery in terms of our Christian life. It's a beautiful picture, really. Anyway, I get aside. Here is a case of how we can build an altar unto the Lord. The idea of not making any graven image is probably why the people saw no physical form of God. Did you ever consider that? Why didn't God just show himself? Why the smoke, the cloud, the lightning, the thunder, the trumpet? How come nobody actually saw God walk down? If the people saw God come down, they would make a graven image of it, wouldn't they? You can't make an image of a cloud, an image of lightning, an image of trumpet blast, things like that, can you? See, what they were seeing, instead of a physical form of what their God looked like, they only saw smoke and such. They saw the what we call the Shekinah glory of God. The Shekinah glory of God. But did you know God changed the plan? Later on, there was an image of God that we could see. Let's turn to John chapter 1. You all know this. We practically have it memorized. John chapter 1, let's read verse 14. It says, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, and he was before me. And of his fullness have we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ." Did you see how the beginning of that starts, talking about the glory of God? That's the Shekinah glory we're talking about here. That I know it because he talks again about Moses giving the law in verse 17. This is what John's thinking back to. The law being given on the mount with the glory of God. Now we have something different. We have an actual physical appearance of Jesus Christ on earth. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And his glory was like that glory on the mountain. And he was full of grace and truth. But you see, back here in Sinai, the people have no way to represent God in earthly form. And you know, the same rules apply for making an altar to worship him. There was no graven image. You can't make a graven image. And by the way, you're not going to make any graven stones here either to make an altar. We cannot make God accessible by any of our own efforts. Nothing you can do can allow you to approach God better. You're not going to hew me a hewn stone altar. God realizes this. And so he establishes these rules. There's no way for human beings to manipulate God in any way. That's the importance of these rules. But we as humans, we're human beings, and we still need a visual expression of our inner spiritual life, don't we? Even James talks about that. You talk about faith, show me your works. I need to see something, James says. You and I need visible expressions. If we can't show God in an earthly form, then we need some way to make our worship a concrete reality, don't we? We need to make it a concrete reality. God realizes that, and that's why he allows an altar to be built. Does God need an altar built? No. God doesn't need an altar. God doesn't need anything from us. He doesn't need us to build an altar to worship him. I can worship him without an altar. He allows the altar to be built so that you and I have a visual. I built that altar, and I came before it, and I worshiped my God. It's for our benefit, don't you see? And he gives very strict regulations for it. God's people are to worship in very specific ways. Very specific ways. God calls out some real specific rules. You can look into them more if you want to read the rules that are in Leviticus. There are very special rules on how you do this, and it shall be one of those, and it'll do this, and it'll be that, and it'll be this is how it's going to look. God has a lot of specific rules, but they're all using simple and not costly equipment. The altar of God was to be built of ordinary dirt or uncut stone. Either dirt or uncut stone. Now Israel, I've been there, Israel has at least as many loose stones kicking around as New England does. Probably more. It's all limestone over there. In fact, there's a Hebrew proverb that says that when God was done creating the earth, he had some leftover rocks and he piled them in Israel. And that's what Israel's like. Israel is a pile of rock, limestone rock, everywhere you go. There's no problem finding rocks to make an altar out of. The poorest of the poor have rocks. And if you don't have rocks, make an altar out of dirt, God says. Everybody's got dirt. There's no restriction on who can worship God. There's no restriction on when you can worship God, and there's no restriction on where you can worship God. There's plenty of rocks, there's plenty of dirt. Build me an altar out of those rocks and dirt. You don't have to have a tool. You don't even have to own a chisel. Heap me up some rocks, pile me up some dirt. You can worship me there. Everywhere where my name is, God says. You know where that is? Everywhere. Everywhere. God's name is on this creation. He made it all. It's his. He signed his name on it like an artist's painting. It's all his. Anywhere you are, you can worship God. Do you see the picture? No matter how poor, no matter how wealthy you are, you can worship God. God makes no restrictions on it. But God's very clear here. He doesn't want any steps going up to the altar. He doesn't want any steps going up to the altar, which tells me that he doesn't want there to be any kind of hint of sexuality involved in his worship, which is very different. You and I may not realize the significance of that. It's very different than most pagan worship of the day. Pagan worship almost always entailed some form of sexuality in order to approach God. Most often, the pagan priests offering to these false gods would make their sacrifices in the nude. That's the way it was. The Bible makes it clear that there is going to be no blending of sexuality with proper worship. It's just you and me, God says. See, God is setting himself apart as unique in all the universe. There is none like him, and there is nothing you can do to manipulate him or to approach him in a better way. There's nothing you can do to give yourself an advantage over someone else. Your money doesn't matter. Your wealth doesn't matter. Whether you own a chisel or a hammer doesn't matter. No matter who you are, we all approach God the exact same way. Nothing but dirt, stones, you and God, wherever you are. Do you see how gracious God is to allow us to meet him anywhere? Yes, there are specific rules on how to approach, but anyone can meet him anytime, any place. It's always been that way. What a God we serve. Brother Jake, would you mind closing us in a word of prayer here this morning?